Welcome to Technically Baltimore's The Look Ahead. I'm Dante Kirby, reporter with Technically, and this series we're exploring the theme of the new normal and discussing the lessons we've learned in 2020. And today, my guest is John Foster, Chief Operations Officer for Fearless.
Hello, Dante. How you doing?
Great. Happy you're here. And I guess for those who are unfamiliar with Fearless and sort of what it does and what it's all about, can you sort of talk about what the company is and like your role as Chief Operations Officer?
Yeah. So Fearless is a full stack digital services firm. We're located in downtown Baltimore. We develop sleek, modern, user-friendly, and where we can, equity-based solutions that support our federal, state, and local governments. And through that, we're trying to build tools that really power communities and really make a difference. So, I mean, that's just in a nutshell. My job as Chief Operating Officer, you know, it depends on who you ask on any particular day, but I'd say my fundamental job is about bringing alignment to the company, right? And alignment comes through making sure that our vision, which is cast down from our CEO, Dilali Drassa, gets executed to the fullest. And that's my day in and day out. And it manifests itself in a variety of different ways, depending on the day.
And you talked a bit about like how when you can, you sort of aim for like a social impact. And I guess, can you talk about how private companies sort of melds that social impact with profitability, where I feel like for some people, when you even say the word capitalism and like being like socially conscious, like that's, or having a social impact that's positive, like those two are mutually exclusive.
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's one that honestly, I think when we started the company, I don't think we really understood what it meant truly to build like this inclusive and equitable world, right? I think we started off with some foundational principles of like how you treat people in general, right? And how we wanted to be treated. And I think it manifested and has grown into something where we understand just the power that we have as individuals, the power that we have as a company to make a difference in people's lives, right? So when we take a look at trying to balance this idea of what I call like inclusiveness versus, you know, profitability, competitiveness, whatever words you want to put in there, it is like kind of like cyclic in nature, right? Self-fulfilling in a little bit, right? So we look at the idea of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? And so we start with this base principle that there are just fundamental things that people need in life, right? And as a company, can we provide those things, you know, to our employees to help them be better? Can we provide those things to our local community, right? And as such, as we build these things, right, we should be thinking of how to not only just help them make their lives better, but think about how to build this ecosystem, right? How to create this environment where we can, you know, uplift, help these people, these individuals get to the sense of like a greater economic, you know, environment, provide them greater opportunities, right? And so when you think about the responsibility of companies, I think it is in those two veins. It is first and foremost, can you help people? Can you build services to meet their core fundamental needs? But also as a business, as a profitable business, how do we create the environment? How do we create the capacity in those individuals to help them succeed? And if you think about how those two things work in conjunction, it becomes like this cyclic kind of, you know, loop of how to just create, you know, a better world altogether.
And I guess Fearless has been around since 2009 in this tech space, sort of with that, I guess, that dual-sided nature, that like idea of like creating software with a soul, and like with that experience, like what are some of the key hurdles and barriers you've seen that seem to stifle like getting people on that, I guess, that hierarchy of needs you were talking of, and like that community progress that Fearless is often trying to like facilitate?
Yeah. I think a couple things, right? I think first and foremost, you always have to go to, once again, that individual. And that's the reason why I talk about this hierarchy of needs, right? At that lowest level, right? There's just common things that people fundamentally need day in and day out. And at Fearless, what we try to do is we try to help, whether it's our customers or help our employees understand how they go about developing, pulling out what those core fundamental needs of the people who we serve, right? So a lot of times the software that we build, even though it's, being facilitated or managed by an end government customer, right? We try to help everybody in that environment, everybody in that ecosystem, everybody who's working on those projects, understand that there is a human at the core of the problem that we're trying to solve, right? And when you get down to those, to that humanistic level, you start to understand what drives people's behaviors, what drives people's fundamental needs as a human, whether it's, providing Medicare or Medicaid service to an individual, how they access those services, right? It's things like that. So we start with this idea of human-centered design at a core principle. And then to your question, right, I think where a lot of companies fundamentally fall down in trying to get at those core things is this lack of understanding of what it means to build services for people. I often have to not remind, but often tell our employees, right, that at the end of the day, you may have someone who you're serving, your end customer, your customer. They may be directing your work day in and day out, but really your true boss is that end customer. It is that person at the other end of the computer, the person at the other end of the telephone, the person at the other end of that service that you're trying to make better. And you cannot lose sight of that thought, right? So I think that's probably the core thing that I see a lot of people, especially tech companies, fail to understand that they're the thing that they build, it really is for someone who has a real need at the end of the day, and we cannot lose sight of that.
And I guess to sort of bring it more back to the year that we've all had, like the watershed moment that is 2020, from the pandemic and the protests centered around equity and police brutality. A lot of companies, when you talk about that human-centered approach, are sort of coming to terms with that, and like from Google to like your local mom and pop shop, like they're making pledges to like better the community, or whether that could be, hiring more from underrepresented communities, or like grants and initiatives and funding. And like over the year, like we're at this point almost at the end of 2021. Like, have you felt the difference as like being in this tech space and like somebody or organization that's been had this mandate since 2009, and like have been doing this kind of work? Have you seen like something tangible occurring in the tech industry among your peers and like even among companies that may be like on the bigger spectrum of your Google and your Facebook? Like, have you felt like some connection with them where like they've like you've seen them in the same spaces that you've been in since 2009,
Yeah, it's a good question, and one thing that you'll always get out of me is brutal and honest truth, right? I think the tech industry can do more. I don't think that we've done enough. I think that the things that plague us, that have plagued us over the last year, that came to light in the last year or so, right? They've always been there, right? And I feel like these companies, and Fearless included, we have a responsibility to do much, much more than we've done, right? So I want to call out that I feel like more can be done. And then when I unpack this idea that more can be done, I think there's one thing that I think has happened that has actually progressed the thought a little bit more. And then I think there's one thing that like is still broke, right? So the one thing that I think that has progressed is a common language, a common way for us to converse about the problems. And I think that's where, if you think about all of the things that have happened in history, right, where mishaps occur, or misunderstandings occur, it the root cause of a lot of those things is a lack of communication. And a lack of that communication comes from a lack of understanding, right? Which is context. And a lack of context comes from a lack of a shared language. So I think where we are in right now in this world of trying to build this ecosystem is now we're trying to get to a place of a common shared language. We may not agree on the terms, right? We may not understand all the terms, right? That's the building of the context. But at least we have a starting point with a shared language. And I think that's the thing that is probably giving me the most hope over the last year or so. So when we talk about the difference between Black Lives Matter or All Lives Matter, right? We may not fully understand that all the context behind those things, but we're starting to define what those terms and what those sayings mean. And so I think that's a good first step. I think, if I take this approach of language to context to systems, we're still broke at the system level, right? And fundamentally, when we talk about systems, right, we're talking about people who have the power and authority to change the way that society, our companies behave and whatnot. And that's where I think a lot of the tech companies have fallen down is I appreciate the pledges. I appreciate the support. I, for example, I know Adobe gave a grant to Bowie State for $1 million, and they're trying to give scholarships to HBCUs to help them grow. And I applaud that so much, right? But there are still systematic things that exist, right, in these companies who have goodwill, right, where if you don't spend the time internally as a company to understand what systems do I have? What power do I have? How do I create a more equitable world, a more diverse world? If you're not doing that work day in and day out as a company, we're missing. We still have the chasm, but we still have the cross to make this world, you know, and how we desire it to be. So, like I said, I applaud the work that's being done, but the systems are still broke, and we need to spend some time building capacity to fix those systems, or otherwise, we'll still be having this conversation next year, the year after that, the year after that. So.
And I guess to sort of hone in on 2020 for you personally, I guess what lessons has 2020 and I guess 2021 at this point taught you?
I think once again, brutal honesty, right? Like I recognize that there's still a lot that I don't know about this topic, right? And I have to continue to learn. And so I think what I've learned is that I like to learn about this topic. I need to continue to learn about this topic. I recognize that the more that I not just read, but the more that I converse with individuals, right? The value is in the conversations, right? And we need to have more conversations in order to understand perspectives, right? So people can hear, I can hear from people and people can hear from me. So we have to do that more and more. The other thing that I think I've learned is in order for this thing to actually change, right? Like the amount of effort, the amount of work that's required, even at Fearless, right? Is a tremendous pull on the organization, right? So we're having to your point, balance this idea of like what it means to be, you know, a for-profit company, but also have this responsibility to ensure that we understand and we're helping our employees grow in the things that we want them to understand, what it means to build a soul for, you know, software with a soul, right? Like we have that responsibility. So how do you blend those two worlds? And that takes a lot of time, takes a lot of capacity, takes a lot of focus, takes a lot of heart, but it's worth it. And I think that's the thing that I've learned is that, you know, it's taken a lot out of me, but it's definitely worth the time and effort.
And I guess to come back to Fearless as a company, why Baltimore? Like, what about Baltimore as the best place for Fearless and other businesses with a similar mission who's trying to, you know, balance the for-profit side with the community engagement and like the community support and like that urge to like make a difference on society on a level that doesn't always result in just like pure profitability, you know? Again, what about Charm City helps Fearless keep its soul?
Yeah, I think it's two thoughts in my head. I think the first thing is, I think at its core, you know, Baltimore took a chance on Fearless when we first started off. I mean, we were less than 20 folks, right? Just trying to find our way in the city, and the more conversations that we had, and the more we got to hear from, you know, the people who are passionate about what this city is about, the more it kind of grew on us, and the more it bled into the ethos of who we are as a company and what we're trying to accomplish, right? So it took a they took a chance on us, and we just appreciate the city for that, right? I think the other thing that I absolutely love, and it also frustrates me about the city, is just the amount of people who really do care, and a lot of that shows up in the nonprofit space, right? So for all the nonprofits out there, they're just a lot of passionate people. And if you spend some time around the people at Fearless, you understand that like passion is a big drive for what we try to do day in and day out. So once again, just the ability to spend time with all the nonprofits, understand their vision and the impact they're trying to make, right? And what and how that translates into leadership and vision and those things, right? Like that's what Baltimore is. And that's the reason why I absolutely love it. And I think honestly, if you look at a lot of other cities around the US, they don't have this kind of passion and purpose driven really in that nonprofit space. I just think we need to pull more out of that space to get to good outcomes.
And I guess to talk more a bit about like the uniqueness of Baltimore and like the things you see in Baltimore and sort of like extrapolate that out into the future. As we move into this new normal of like remote work and, you know, internet connectivity being like essential and like closer to utility just in like its impacts than what we thought it was honestly like 2 years ago, really. Like, and even the heightened level of public health consciousness, I guess, what do you see in the future of Baltimore for like digital equity and even like Fearless as an organization, and like where do you see Baltimore growing as a tech community?
Yeah, I think we're at a tipping point of some sort, right? And I honestly can't predict which way we're going to land on this, right? But there are some facts, right? So one is, if you look at the last census, right, we actually lost some population, right, according to the census output, right? It's funny that we lost some folks, right? But we still see the city putting resources to try to create, you know, better outcomes for the city, right? So that's one thing, right? The other thing that we saw is, you know, we've seen in, you know, the Maryland legislature around passing the Digital Connectivity Act, right? There is a desire, right, to create this more inclusive environment, really. And at the epicenter of that is this idea of connectivity, right? And the internet, right? So you take those two things, right? And then you tack on this one thought that I kind of want everybody to walk away with is, people don't have to leave their communities for high paying jobs and for good opportunities, right? And once again, if you take a look at where Baltimore is, I think that's what you see is that people leaving, and we have the opportunity, and you see it in the actions and, for example, in the legislature where they're trying to create the conditions for people to not have to do that, right? And so I think this whole idea of remote work and what is the potentially going to be the new normal centers on the city's ability to really get at the heart of demonstrating, right, getting out of people's minds that like the city can't be a place where we have good opportunities and high paying jobs, and the mechanism by which we can, one of the mechanisms by which we can fix that is by giving people direct access to the internet, right? We are in this knowledge-based economy. This is the way that the US is going. Baltimore City has the opportunity to be at the center of that. They have all the other infrastructure around them to be successful, from the hospital systems to the university systems, right? We have a good leading-off point in our city government right now. We have it all, right? Now we've got to get this connectivity issue solved, and I think that you're going to see leaps and bounds into what impact the city can have across the board.
So I want to say thank you for taking the time to chat with me. Like, I appreciate it.
Yep.
And I guess that's been technically Baltimore's The Look Ahead. And until next time, stay connected. We'll be right back.